Good morning. Good to have everyone with us today, especially if you're visiting. Thank you for being here, and stick around afterwards before our class time. We can shake your hand and learn your name and get to know you a little more. Genesis 13, talk about Abram, continuing our story. Before we get to 14, we have to go through 13. There's a war in chapter 14, but before we get to the war in 14, we have to see Abram as the loyal peacemaker in Genesis chapter 13. If you remember from chapter 12, Abraham got hungry and he wandered down to Egypt. And he was afraid that if people saw his wife, if Pharaoh and the Egyptians saw his wife, they would kill him. So he did some things that displeased God. And so it is by God's mercy that Abram is now returning to the promised land. Abram at this point is not getting what he deserves, but he is allowed to continue the process of sanctification, or the word that was coined, holification, holified. Trademarked Lauren Hollingsworth on that. But we see God's process of bringing him out of foolishness and of fault and of his own mistakes, which he'll make again in the future, and continuing to set him apart for the holy purpose that God has established him for. In Egypt, we might call Abram... This doesn't look like it's open, so I'll crack it open. We see Abram as, I don't know, a fair-weather fan. That makes sense. Someone who is rooting for the team until things go sour, and then he abandons that team for fairer pastures, so to speak. But he is allowed, after being disloyal to his wife and God's promise as well, to become more of a foul weather friend. So the fair weather fan is a fan of a team until things go sour, and then they change. But you all have friends like that, the foul weather friend. They're calm, they're humble. You almost forget that they're there when things are going well. And then when the weather gets rough or when strife hits, they're the friend that sticks to you, that is loyal. They really show their character and their worth when things are not going well. It's the person you can turn to when all else seems to be going wrong. We see Abram become more of a foul-weather friend in chapter 13. And like I said before he goes to war in chapter 14, he has some peacemaking to do. He has to shore up his loyalty to God and to others before he goes to war in chapter 14. If sacrifice is giving to another person, to sacrifice, is to give to someone at cost to ourselves, then loyalty is to sacrifice to another person over an extended period of time. We can sacrifice once. We can say, all right, I'll give this to you now and it'll cost me, but never again. But the loyal person is one who does what is best for another at cost to themselves time and time again. But as we'll see here, loyalty is not leniency, and loyalty is not freely just availing yourself. There is a right way to be loyal, and there are right people in which to be loyal to. Y'all know the person who's so loyal, it just beats them down, and they're without joy, they're without peace, and they have no center to themselves. But loyalty, when done to the right person, to the right being, because it can be to God as well, and in the right way, can give us a bounce in our step. But more than a bounce in our step, it can give us a joy and a peace. Let's start in chapter 13, verse 1. So Abram went up from Egypt, and he and his wife, he's okay calling her his wife again, and all that he had, and Lot went with him into the Negev. Now Abram was very rich in livestock, in silver, and in gold. And he journeyed on from the Negev as far as Bethel, to the place where his tent had been at the beginning, between Bethel and Ai, to the place where he had made an altar at the first. And there Abram called upon the name of the Lord. Abram is resetting. He's hitting the reset button on his loyalty to God. And this is displayed in the fact that he comes back to Bethel, where he has been again. He was there in chapter 12. It was where he first built an altar and called upon the name of the Lord. He wanders down to Egypt, trying to escape famine, gets involved with Pharaoh there, and now he comes back to the same place, and he is calling upon the name of God. He is returning as a willing and loyal participant in the covenant. God's covenant is a mutual participation. It requires two parties to fully participate. And Abraham is returning now as a willing and loyal participant. And he calls upon the name of God. But it is the name of the Lord. It is the name of Yahweh, the name of the covenant God. In chapter 2 of Genesis, we have God as a creator, and man has, well, he's been created, but we don't see the relationship between him and God yet. But in chapter 3, Moses switches to the Lord, to Yahweh, the covenant God, the God who isn't just interested in creating, but wants a relationship, who wants to be loyal to us and for us to be loyal to him. And that's the name that Abram is calling to God. And I envision Abram. I mean, I start my prayers like this all the way, dear God, and I rush into the rest of the prayer. And that's fine. But I envision Abraham pausing, and instead of saying, dear God, he is pausing and saying, God of the covenant, partner with me, who has called to me and wants to join with me. Does that frame? That frames the prayer a little bit differently. Calling out to God by a specific name that resembles his covenant commitment. Now, we do this all the time with friends or with your spouse. There's a million Jennies in the world, but there's only one Jenny to me. And there's a way I say her name, and there's a way she says my name, and it is special. And you have friends like that too. Their name, even though it's one in a billion, or billions, that name signifies more than just a label, but there is love attached to calling that name. And of course, to a much greater extent, when we call upon the name of God, we ought not to just be naming him as a God among many gods, but as the highest God and as a God that we look to above all others. Psalm 91 encapsulates some of this concept, as do many of the Psalms. Psalm 91, verse 14. This is God speaking. He says, because he holds fast to me in love. God isn't just interested in blind followers or subjects who just do things mindlessly. He holds fast to me in love, and I will deliver him. I will protect him because he knows my name. When he calls to me, I will answer him. I will be with him in trouble. I will rescue him and honor him. With long life, I will satisfy him and show him my salvation. We know this is true. What really is better than time spent being with friends? Of course, you call on your friends. You know, I've got a flat tire, come and save me. Something's busted on my house. You cry out to them, and we've talked about crying out to God. But the time that we spend with a friend, we don't have to create anything. Maybe we do something, but we don't have to build anything. It's not like, you know, we pay our friends to spend time with us, or they pay us, and that makes it worth it. How about between two people who love each other, husband and wife? I mean, there's a lot of benefits we get from our spouses, but what about that tranquil silence? Sitting together with the person that you love in peaceful silence. And how about taking time with friends and silence between those that you really love and putting them together into simply giving God our time and giving God our silence. It goes counter to our culture today, in which we must always be productive, in which we must always be creating something. And the first thing Abram does is he comes back and he resets his loyalty to God, and he stops in Bethel and he builds an altar. He says, there's nothing that I'm going to accomplish that is better than calling upon the name of the Lord and knowing Him as my partner in this covenant work. Abram is first loyal to the right being. He's first loyal to God, and he is so in the right way by keeping Him as God and calling upon His name. Well, let's continue reading verse 5. You know, there's that nephew, that tag-along nephew. Lot has no mother and no father, and Lot tries hard. He does try. And yet Lot fails in so many ways. We see Abraham attempting to preserve his loyalty. Think about you with your family and your friends, being loyal to them. We're going to see Abram preserving his loyalty by settling this dispute that arises. Let's read about that dispute, verse 5. And Lot, who went with Abram, also had flocks and herds and tents, so that the land could not support both of them dwelling together. So they're in the promised land, and Abram's got flocks and tents and herds and money, and Lot, as the nephew, has acquired herds, not so much money as Abram, but he has acquired herds and other things, and they're so prosperous together in the land of Canaan that the herdsmen begin to quarrel with each other. The land could not support both of them, verse 6. For their possessions were so great they could not dwell together, and there was strife between the herdsmen of Abram's livestock and the herdsmen of Lot's livestock. At that time, the Canaanites and the Perizzites were dwelling in the land. Then Abram says to Lot, "Let there be no strife between you and me, and between your herdsmen and my herdsmen, for we are kinsmen. Is not the whole land before you? Separate yourself from me. If you take the left hand, then I will go to the right. Or if you take the right hand, then I will go to the left." Lot lifted up his eyes and saw that the Jordan Valley was well watered everywhere, like the garden of the Lord, like the land of Egypt in the direction of Zoar. This was before the Lord God destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah. So the land of Galilee, where Jesus ran around, the Sea of Galilee, south of there, the water flows into the Dead Sea. What they're saying is that back in these days, the Dead Sea was actually beautiful and prosperous, and that this is what Lot is looking down toward. Verse 11, so Lot chooses for himself the valley of the Jordan, and Lot journeyed east, thus they separated from each other. Abram settled in the land of Canaan, while Lot settled among the cities of the valley and moved his tent as far as Sodom. Now the men of Sodom were wicked, great sinners against the Lord. Dun, dun, dun. You know, it's possible to be loyal to the right person, but to do so in the wrong way. There's a difference between being loyal to family and being lenient. Abram is respectful, or he honors adult Lot's ability to rule himself. The concept of autonomy, autonomy, means self-law. If someone is autonomous, then they live according to their own law, which means it makes a difference what their law is within them. And it seems like Abram is living according to this motto of sorts. To do for another what they can do for themselves robs them of their birthright. To do for another person what they can do for themselves robs them of their birthright. Now, maybe Abram knows that Lot is going to select this prosperous land that is close to the sinful people of Sodom and Gomorrah, but Lot's an adult. Abram has to face that. What did it say that Lot was most focused on in this valley of the Jordan? What did it say? It says he looked down and he saw the valley of the Jordan, that it was well watered. And what did it look like? It looked like something we read about 12 chapters ago. It looked like the garden of the Lord. He looks out there and he says, I've heard stories of the land of Eden. That looks as beautiful as the land of Eden. He's kind of like, well, what made the garden beautiful? I mean, the garden was beautiful, but what was the thing that made the garden valuable? It was God, right? It was God that made the garden valuable and beautiful and a place that was worth being in. Is God in this valley? I mean, I understand God is everywhere, okay? Like, don't hold me to that. But what kind of people are living in the valley there? It's sinful people. It's people who reject God. And Lot looks out there and he sees prosperity. And yet there's this whole aspect of darkened spirituality that he doesn't even take into consideration. He says, I'm going to move to that town because it's prosperous, never asking, well, is there any kind of church body there that can care for me? Is there any kind of support for me there spiritually? The law within Lot sees prosperity and is ignorant to spirituality. He's like the person who hears a great concert and he goes up to the performer. Let's say they play a guitar and he goes up to them afterwards and he says, man, I just wanted to congratulate you on a great performance. And the performer's like, thank you. And he says, no, I'm talking to your guitar. That was an amazing performance. You know, the garden is nothing without God. And what Lot doesn't see is that this garden isn't filled with God. It's filled with, I don't know, the serpent, with Satan. Aristotle once said, to make wealth the source of happiness is to praise the instrument rather than the performer. To see wealth, to see prosperity, to see things as our source of happiness is to praise that guitar rather than going to the source of the harmony and of the sound. And so here's Abram, and he's stuck, and he says, I don't think Lot's going to choose the right thing, but we cannot get along together. Proverbs 17:14 says, the beginning of strife is like letting out water, so quit before the quarrel breaks out. There's a bucket, and the beginning of the strife is like there's a leak in this bucket. And if you don't solve that strife, if you don't solve that conflict soon, the whole thing is going to break out. And so Abram, the wise patriarch, sees this. He says, this is going to blow up in my face, and yet I don't know that Lot's going to make the right decision. Now, he could say, I'm the older man. Hey, I'm Abram. You don't know about me, but you better honor me, because if you don't honor me, God will curse you, and I'm an older man. So listen, is that what he does? What a humble man. He goes to Lot and he says, I don't want to fight with you because you're my kin, but we have to separate. I'll go where you are not, and I'm going to let you pick the most prosperous place. I'm going to let you pick the place that you want to go, and I'll go through all the trouble of going somewhere else. Jesus would come along in Luke 12:58, and Jesus would say, if you have a conflict with somebody and you're on your way to the judge, are you not smart enough to settle that outside of court? It's better for you to settle things before going to the judge. And you say, yeah, but I might not get my fair share. And Jesus is saying, exactly. It's not about stuff, it's about people. And Abram is living Jesus, say before Jesus was alive, but you know how complicated that'll be. Before Jesus comes and establishes the New Testament way of doing things, he allows Lot to choose. Having established his loyalty with God, he now comes and preserves his loyalty with this needy nephew. But he lets Lot go. You're an adult. You need to make this decision. And you're going to face the consequences. Sometimes Sometimes we have to step back and let God take a swing at folks. Not because we want to see that, but it's because some of us only learn from the University of Hard Knocks. Are you one of those people too? You know, advice and people trying to convince you doesn't always work, and so life sometimes has to slap you upside the head. I know I've been there. It seems like that's the story that Lot is going to face. And so what about Abram? He's stuck without the most prosperous place. Let's go on to verse 14. The Lord said to Abram, after Lot had separated, "Lift up your eyes, and from the place where you are, northward, southward, eastward, and westward, and for all the land you see, I will give you to your offspring forever. I will make your offspring as the dust of the earth, so that if one can count the dust, your offspring can also be counted. Arise and walk through the length and the breadth of the land, for I will give it to you." So Abram moved his tent, and he came and he settled by the oaks of Mamre, which are at Hebron, and he built an altar there. He builds an altar, and decades later, he's going to be building his tombstone there. Abram is in the same place that he's later going to die. And yet there's something that Abram is loyal to. He's been loyal to God, and he's been loyal to Lot, and now he has this realization that he must be loyal to the fact that he's a man. Because that's where loyalty can take us too far, is when we begin to think, well, hey, maybe I'm like God. Maybe we don't think that, but we act that way. And we overextend ourselves, and we realize that we are only human. Psalm 50, verse 12. Let me read Psalm 50, starting in verse 12. This is God speaking again, and he says, "If I were hungry, I would not tell you, for the world and its fullness are mine. Do I eat the flesh of bulls or drink the blood of goats? Offer to God a sacrifice of thanksgiving and perform your vows to the Most High and call upon me in the day of trouble, and I will deliver you and you shall glorify me." See, part of calling upon God and worshiping God is realizing, first of all, no part of our worship and no part of our work adds anything to Him. We don't add anything to God by our worship and our commitment to Him. And by the same token, all of our worship and all of our work doesn't add a day to our lifespan. And so, how can we be loyal to those? How can we stop and worship and that still be of value? I love what Abram does here because he stops and he does not overreach the promises of God. You know, if we're caught up and we're entering that season, right, that holiday season, and I love the holiday season, but it's just about to get crazy, right? It's just about to get busy. And we're going to have to make a choice whether we're going to get caught up in work, and we're going to get caught up in activity, or we're going to pause from that and say, God cares about me understanding who I am and understanding who He is and spending valuable time with those closest to me. There's a Russian proverb, at least that's what I read. I could be wrong. It says, "Work does not make one rich, but round-shouldered." Work does not make someone rich. Now, work does a lot of things for us. It gives us our necessities. It gives us things that we need. And really what this proverb is saying is that good hard work can make you solid and strong and capable. But no matter how much you earn, God will always be richer. No matter how much you work, someone will always be wealthier than you. And so let's stop from work for a time. We can afford to pause and to worship God. Work can give us things that we need and can give us strength for the day, but it does not define our true worth. So for the next few months, where will our loyalties lie? Which kingdom will we seek? Can we be loyal to the idea of simply being with another person, simply enjoying time with one another? Can we not make this season about winning disputes or having more than someone else and yet be settled for the sake of our relationships? And can we connect our feeble lives that are so short and so frail to something bigger than consumption and material things? Because if there is no God and there is no covenant with God, then the only reason to live is to produce and to gather and to work and to work. But if there is a God, then He deserves our loyalty. And so we learn from Abram, the loyal foul-weather friend, that because there is a God, there is nothing better that we can give to each other or to God than our time and our silence in devotion. Loyalty shapes our life. And because there is a God, we can take the loss in that dispute. If you have a dispute with a family member or with a friend or with a brother, you can afford to take the short end of that stick for the sake of your relationship. You know, Abram sort of loses to Lot, and Lot's going to make some really negative decisions here. But 7+ generations from here comes this lady named Ruth, who is from this horrible people named the Moabites, who have their descendants all the way back to Lot. And yet Ruth is this beautiful soul that continues the seed of David and on down to Jesus. Abram may never know that the choice he makes to be settled with Lot is one day going to lead to a generation-changing person named Ruth. Because there is a God, we are made for more than work and consumption, but there is value in waiting and in giving and in prayer. And in this way, loyalty to God and to one another will shape our soul. I appreciate your attention and your time spent with me looking at the life of Abram. If there is a need that we can help you with as we close today, don't leave without finding someone, without praying with someone or coming forward while we stand and sing together.